Good morning. Oh, turn it on. Good morning. I think we'll go ahead and start, and because we promised from 8 to 9, and I know it's a busy week for all of us with it being finals week. I'm so glad that you came this morning. I would like to introduce Dr. Sue Rankin, and she was hired by the university system to do a climate assessment survey of our system. And what was really interesting was last spring, you probably saw me sitting in the hall or sending you notes to complete the survey, and then we had some fun with it. We gave away some prizes, and I think Deb is here. I know she was a Mystery Beaver winner, and so we had lots of fun with that. But we did, and as a result of that, did get a lot of surveys completed. And the climate assessment survey was to take a look at how our students felt about our campus and our community. And Sue will go more into the details of why the university system thought this was important. And I also forwarded Sue a copy of our strategic four that we've been working so hard on, thanks to Dr. Lee, and also our vision that documents, so she could take a look at it and see how our findings meshed with those two documents. And I'd like for Sue to say a little bit more about herself when she comes up, and if you'll give her a hand and welcome her.
And I'm not going to use this, that's okay. It's kind of like church, you know, you come in, you sit in the back, right? So there's a few people up here if you want to sit in the front to see better. As everyone said, I'm Sue Rankin. I hail from originally Brooklyn. So I talk really fast, and I found that when I come to the Midwest, I need to slow down a bit. So I'll bring it down from 78 to 33 and a third. And if you know what that means, you have gray hair like me. And I now hail from Penn State University. I moved to Penn State after my undergrad degree in New York, and I was going to stay for 2 years and get my degree and then leave, and I've been there for 27, so I kind of put down some roots. My first 17 years there I spent as a physiologist, so my background actually is science. And I taught physiology, and I coach women's softball, so I'm very excited to see that your team is going to the regionals today, I think it's today, right, NAIA. I'm in the regional, I know they're going today, so I read the paper this morning. The next 12, 13 years I spent in the administration. I worked in the vice provost's office, doing what I'm doing with this research and looking at issues of difference on different college campuses. So I'm going to go through the presentation, and I'm going to encourage it to be interactive, so I don't want to just talk for an hour because you'll be bored. So there is a report that was sent to the institution that's available for you to look at. It's really good nighttime reading. There's lots of data, and we're just going to touch on the pieces that I found to be most salient from the report in the presentation this morning. But there's lots of great information, I think, in here. And one of the things we found is that it's not all bad. Okay, and folks always think about the challenges. And I'm here to say that I think if I had a child, I'd probably send him to North Dakota to go to school based upon some of the things I found in regards to the findings. So we still do have some things to work on. And those are the things I think that, that Dr. Lee and others are working on in regards to diversity for. And I read through that, and the actions are great, and they're following the grid that the system is using, so it kind of fits in with that. So it's all kind of coming together, along with your diversity plan that I read through last evening, all 40-some-odd pages. But there's really, really good meshing between what we found in the study, and how you can incorporate that into your plan. So my hope today is to be informative, but also to be helpful. Let's see. Make sure I do this right. Not my computer, so. There we go. So as Evelyn spoke, I was hired by the system to come in and work with the system. And I've been at now over 60 institutions around the country doing this work, as well as 15 states in the Ag Extension unit. So I'm working with U.S. Department of Agriculture and doing extension as well. So we're looking at issues of difference in extension units, which is interesting. So all of the institutions in the system were involved in the project. But I will, whoops, you want to do last thoughts? Yeah, we didn't do anything yet. That was pretty quick, huh? But I will say you're the only one that invited me to come back and present, which is something about your commitment to issues of difference on this campus, and that the president and the vice president of student affairs and a lot of other folks who are administrators are here as part of that process. So it's not just that, it's a top-down, very visible, very supportive atmosphere here in Ranches of Difference. And I say difference because diversity for me is a very, very large paradigm. Okay, it's not an affirmative action-driven paradigm. It's not about just race, and not just about gender, but about how do staff folks feel being here, okay? How do faculty and students interact? You know, what are the issues there? Do the housing and food services folks feel as much a part of the campus as do those who are teaching faculty? So, giving that. So a little background for those that don't know. I was commissioned in 05 to do this. It's been a long process with as many system campuses as there are here. To evaluate the campus climate in each systems campus, to report back to each campus with a report like you see here for Minot State. So each campus got their own individual report. And there's an aggregate report also available that you can look at if you'd like to do benchmarking with the rest of the system. This report does not contain, how does Minot compare to Bismarck compare to, it's not that. Okay, what it is here's the overall, and now you can take that and benchmark that against what you're doing here. And I will say, based on this, you're doing pretty well at Minot. So, good news. So why study about climate? All of my research is on climate in higher education and what that means, and all of my publications are around climate. And for me, it's about creating communities of difference, okay, which means it's not, for me, it's about community building, which is why it's so encouraging to see you all here at 8 o'clock in the morning during finals week. Because obviously you're committed or you wouldn't be sitting here. Unless, because they give you really good food, too, but that's not reasonable. So the folks I have listed here are people that I built my research around. And I'll talk more about the research in a second. But it's important to note that there are a lot of folks doing this work in the field now. And that I get to build on people that are smarter than I am, which is a good thing. The second bullet point is the one that I find in every college mission statement around the country where I go. Everyone wants to make the climate warm, fuzzy, welcoming, kumbaya, I call it in student affairs, when I do student affairs work. It's the kumbaya in student affairs, right? And so part of this is, how do we make it a welcoming, warm atmosphere for everyone? And we do a real good job of talking the talk, and not a very good job of walking the walk. Okay, so part of it is, how do we take that mission, turn around, and make it into action so we can actually work on? So there is a commitment here, obviously. This is really a quick overview of what I've done since I've been here, and what you've done in regards system-wide. So 1999, a system-wide council was developed to look at what's happening system-wide in regards to the difference and diversity. And each campus has a member appointed to that committee by the president. And here, both Evelyn and Wiley have been very involved in the process with me. And then that council starts to look at how we can make this not just a Minot State, but how do we then make that system-wide. And I'm not sure that I like that system, and I'll say that right up front. I think Minot is a very different place than Bismarck, a very different place than NDSU, or UND. And so to try and compare campuses or make a system-wide that's going to work, I think it's maybe not the best way to go. So there needs to be some coordination of efforts throughout the system and sharing of best practices about what works someplace may work another place, but I'm not sure that potentially it'll work. And the reason I say that is, I've been in a lot of your campuses, and they're very different demographically, contextually. So how can we make those kind of comparisons? So that's what we did, individual reports. But I am creating a system-wide plan that will assist, and we had a retreat a few weeks ago to talk about that, what that looked like. And the council service that, obviously, I gave some examples of the reports that the council have done, and one is the tribal relations report was a very good report, I thought. So I used that as part of my report for you all. This is the model that came out of my national study. So if you're interested in research, those who are faculty, this is what I base the work that I do on. And what's surprising to me is it actually is working, because I had no idea it was going to do that. So when I go to a campus, this is the kind of the product we follow. And I'm happy to talk more about that if you're interested in the research after. So there are three parts of the model. One is assessment, which is what we don't do a very good job of around issues of difference in higher education. Oh, thank you. It wasn't me. That was good. we collect lots of data in higher education and then put it on a shelf. Or collect data, write a love report, and the report goes on a shelf. And all those of great here, like here, going, oh, yeah, I got that, yeah. Implementation and accountability is a piece we don't do a very good job of. So part of the process with me is to try and help you work on how to implement the things that we found and how to be held accountable to make sure they're done. So not pie-in-the-sky kind of actions, but ones that are measurable and that are outcome-driven. I'm all about learning outcomes and teaching to the outcomes. So to date, what we've done, I'll give you a quick overview. October 05, we started the process and finally now finishing. Developed a survey, went through a lot of drafts before it was everybody was happy with it. It was both in online format of paper and pencil, if you wished. Each campus developed their own marketing plan with me to figure out how to get this out, and I know we got a winner in the room, so obviously the marketing worked. System IRB approval to make sure we were following the IRB, which is Institutional Review Board, to make sure we're not going to hurt anybody in the research that we do. And it's kind of like herding cats when you try and work with lots of different campuses all at one time. So it took a little longer to get through the process than we thought, but I'm glad we're to the end point at this point. We made available the survey to everyone for a long period of time based upon when it was best for each campus to put it out. So the survey for MSU was delivered in February and March. And then in July we met, updated about the progress, and think about next steps. And if I'm in the way, maybe I need to move. People are kind of looking around me, so I'll try and go over here. In August, December 06, we got the report drafts out and filed for those each campus. And then in December, the ag report was forwarded to Katie Nettle, who is the now chair of the Diversity Council system-wide, and to Rhonda Schauer, who's from the system office. And then January 07, that final report got sent to everyone. Okay, so the instrument was, to reiterate, 62 questions with some space for folks to provide commentary. And you're one of the few campuses who had enough comments to actually do a thematic analysis based on the comments. That's part of the report. If you want to read some of the voice, they are compelling. And I think give voice to the data, which is important in this information. The only online survey. The sample was a population, which is unheard of usually in survey research. But the reason we do study, we do a population, is because if Evelyn got a survey, she's going to say, well, why did I get one? She didn't get a survey, she's going to say, why didn't I get one? Okay, so I want to talk about this. So we thought doing population would allow everyone to have voice if they wish to. The results provide information about four things. One, what's your personal experience on campus as a person of this community at Minot State? Number two, what are your perceptions about what it's like for other people here at the university? Number three, what's the institution doing or not doing in response to those? And number four, you can't just complain, you got to tell me how to make a change. Okay, so those are the four parts of the survey, which is valid and reliable and all those good things that we talked about in survey research. So there are over 600 people that responded to the survey, which seems like a small number. When you look at the response rate, you'll see it's very different though. 11% of you gave comments, as I just talked about. And again, limitations so we are on the same page here. And also for research, there's self-selection bias, which means that you don't have to participate if you don't want to. So is the choir responding, or are those who are really angry responding? Okay, or again, the folks in the middle. In this case, we kind of got a lot of the folks in the middle, which is a good thing. So the only response rate that was low was undergraduate students, so to be a little cautionary about the results in regard to students. Faculty response rates, 41% of faculty responded. That's a good thing. And I did look at all the different positions and kind of combine and see how you had people combining. So we had instructor, assistant professor, associate professors, and those were made up the 75 people that responded. Staff response rates, also good, 48% for staff, both classified and non-classified, and also academic staff. Administrators also, so yay administrators for being supportive of the process as well. 12 of 19, I think, filled it out. And let me say also that I combined categories up as promised when there was less than 10 in the cell. Okay, so if there were only 9 academic staff, I would have had to combine them into a different staff category rather than put them out there by themselves. Okay, so when we do the data analysis, you know, I can't identify who you are. That was the point. Student response rates, again, 16%, grad students, 37%, and I gave you an idea of how those two broke down. So there were graduate students who responded and at a higher rate than the undergraduates. But 400 students is not anything to take a stick at. I mean, 400 students is a pretty good number of students to get some information back on. So my response to that, I gave you some graphs, and I'm going to share this PowerPoint with Evelyn before I leave so you can then take this and use it any way that you wish. So this is yours and not mine. And the data is yours. So if you'd like me to do more analysis on your pieces, we can do that as well. By gender and position, I want to give you an idea of how it broke out by male and female, women and men. Women tend to respond to surveys much more often than guys do. That's just the fact of survey research. I also think that you're outnumbered here anyway, guys, so that makes sense for the population. Sexual orientation and status, mostly people that are identified as being heterosexual. Of the numbers of people that identify as LGBTQ, most of them are students. By age, I really didn't want to know how old you were, but I wanted to get an idea of what the breakdown was in the age of people, and we can see that from 19 and under, at least the students who responded, it's mostly students who are traditionally aged. So it kind of gives you an idea of the folks responding to the survey in regards to the students who are here. This is an important slide. By race and ethnicity, okay, obviously it's mostly white. No big surprise. Okay, that's what I find every place I go. The big surprise, though, is this one. 31 people identified as Native American, American Indian. Of the 26 who said other, most of those identified as Native American, American Indian, but didn't want to say they were that. They wanted to say they were tribal affiliation only. Okay? I don't find those numbers anywhere in the country, as I found them in North Dakota. That's saying an important piece about who you are and who the students are you might be able to recruit. So I did a breakdown by the other, and these are the tribal affiliations that came out of the other category. So you've got an idea of the number, not only of those that are American Indian, Native American, but also, and I use both those words because there's a debate in the Indian community about now, which term do I use? Am I Native American or American Indian? I prefer American Indian in my studies because when I put Native American on a survey, a lot of white students say they're Native American. They're white Caucasian students, which is not what we're trying to get at. So I asked for tribal affiliation. And you've got a pretty large number of different tribes represented in the study. I'm sure there are more on campus that didn't respond. So in order to do analysis, obviously, I can't take those smaller numbers and do any kind of analysis, and so I tried to put them into people of color, and I hate that terminology. Okay, so if you go back to the other slide, what you see is that there are also a number of Latino, Chicano, Hispanic folks who are attending. You also have the number of Asian people that are attending and African Americans. So to take all of those people from the other people of color, I think, is ludicrous. But in order to statistics, I have no choice. So that's why the people of color versus white is the nomenclature we'll use. I think it would be important for you to think about looking at the Native American responses separately and see how the students who are Native American are responding. Spiritual, you can't, it's hard to read slides. Spiritual affiliation is, and you're all doing this now. Okay. The highest number of people is Lutheran. That's no surprise to me in North Dakota either. And the other is Roman Catholic. Okay? The other two high ones are no affiliation and other, and spiritual not no affiliation. And the reason I put them all up there is because to show you that you do have people here who are Wiccan, and folks here who are Jewish, and folks who are Baptists or Assembly of God. So you have a pretty broad range of spiritual affiliations on campus. And that's an important thing to think about. For example, if you have Muslim folks on campus, where do they pray during the day? How often do Muslims have to pray during the day? Anybody know? 5. And so if they've got classes 8 to 5, then how are we providing for them to pray? If they can't pray on campus, where do they go off campus to do that? Okay? Where's the African American woman get her hair cut? As a white woman, I can go anywhere downtown and get my hair cut. African American? Can't. Where can they go? Closest place? Bismarck. So part of those things that you can do to show people you're welcoming, someone's going to come to school here. Okay, they are not going to come here and look at the campus first. They're going to do what?
Look at the community.
Community, and? Where am I going to go to find out information about Minot State?
The internet.
I'm going to go to your website. How welcoming is your website? Symbolically, how welcoming is it? It doesn't cost you a cent to do that. You just have to go out and figure out where's the nearest mosque, where's the nearest Buddhist temple, where's the nearest synagogue, where's the nearest, so forth. Those are things you can do. Where do I get my hair? Where do I buy hair products from African-American women? Okay? So those are kind of things you can kind of think about. And if we're not, if we don't have any availability of that, can we talk with the community downtown, that some of the businesses, about maybe starting to supply those? There's town and gown kind of a way to work in with the community. So I'm getting ahead of myself, but you got the idea. By time, and Missy, I want to see how long people have been here. You have some students who have been here more than 30 years, so you need to get them graduated. And I'm guessing that some of those are part-time staff members who are working and going to school and raising three kids. But 30 years is a long time to be a student. So, we also ask questions about, do you have any disability that might influence your ability to be on campus or so forth. So we have lots of information about students and employees. And you'll notice that there are lots of students who are ADHD, ADD, and learning disability. Okay, that says something for you in providing services. They are providing services for those students. Excuse me, that's happening a little bit more now in higher education. Students identifying before they get here and expecting to have services when they get to college. So something to keep in mind about those. By position, by citizenship status, if you can see, oh sorry, I didn't have a position, but citizenship, is that most of the folks who are here are from the United States. Okay, but you do have 13% of those students who replied to our survey who are international. That may be a new recruiting base for you. Okay, international students and Native American, American Indian students. I think those are your two main recruiting bases. And I talked to Evelyn about this a little bit earlier, is that we have a hard time at Penn State even getting American Indian students to even consider us. We maybe have 15 students on campus. And they come and they leave because they don't feel welcome. There's not a community there for them. There is a community here at Minot for them. So part of it is how you recruit those students to come. And I'm also curious because you have 13% at a small campus in the United States of international students. With the Patriot Act, it's getting harder and harder to recruit students in the United States, okay, because of all the rules and regulations about coming. And our graduate faculty right now are thinking about not having international students as students because if they go home, they can't come back sometimes. So you get a student all worked into a program with a graduate faculty member, and then that student ends up leaving. So part of this is a little education to grad faculty about what it is in the Patriot Act. Okay, I asked two questions about for students. One was income level, and one was, the next slide is your parental level of education. And I asked those questions to figure out who are the first-generation low-income students without asking the question. Okay? Because students wouldn't answer that question. They will tell me their income. So here you've got 133 of the students who responded saying that they're 1999 or below. Okay? Next slide, we have undergraduate students saying that I had one or both parents who did not go to high school. Okay? And I have some that said we had only parents that went to high school and that was it. And when I take these two categories and these two and add them together and do a crosstab with that last slide about income, those are your first-generation low-income students and quite a few of them that you have on this campus. So what are we doing for those students? It's a very different experience for a first-generation student. How many is first-generation here? Anybody? Okay, me too. My parents had no clue about what college was, how to apply to college, what college to look for. As long as it's close to home, that's all they cared about. Don't go away from home. Right? But other than that, what do we do to help those students acclimate? Because it's very different for first-generation students. Where most students who replied came from main campus, that makes sense also. There are some distance learning and some that are both campus and distance learning. First-generation students don't do well in distance learning, by the way. Okay? That's some of the research coming out now. It's really important to have that connection with somebody on campus, a face that you can have a mentor with. And one of our goals now, and we have a very large institution, we have 47,000 undergraduates. And we're trying to make that a warm, welcoming climate for them. Okay, so part of the goal now as a student comes in is that they are attached to a faculty member, and that faculty member is their mentor for the 4 years they're there, hopefully, if they stay 4 years or 5 or 6. But the idea is to have them attach a name and a person they can talk to, other than an advisor. Attended a diversity program at MSU in the last year. I wanted to see who was filling the survey out. was the choir filling the survey out. They all went to all these programs. But I think what it's telling me is that you're doing a pretty good job of getting folks to go to programs. Because the majority of folks in the survey have said they've attended something. That's a good thing. Whether it's required, I don't know, but they're doing a good job of doing that. We do have a number of people, though, 35% of the survey respondents who didn't go to anything. So it says we do have some people that aren't real aware of what's going on campus. Okay, any questions so far on demographics? I know I'm going pretty quick. I know the coffee hasn't set in yet. All right, anything else you'd like to know about demographics I didn't get to? Yes?
What percentage from North Dakota, what about from outside there?
We actually didn't ask that question. The question is, how many from North Dakota, how from outside North Dakota? I don't know. We didn't ask in-state, out-of-state. We should have. Okay, so for a future reference, you need to do that. What is the percentage right now in-state, out-of-state? Do you know, overall population?
March?
Yeah. Do you know what's recruiting, in-state or out-of-state? Mostly in-state is what I thought, right? But given, I know that declining enrollment is an issue across North Dakota. Declining population across North Dakota is an issue. Okay, so what can we do? Where do we find a niche to recruit students to come here? And I'm telling you that I've been around the country, and this is a incredibly amazing place for Native American and American Indian students. It's a small campus. They'll feel welcome. They won't feel lost. There'll be a community here. And I think you're missing the boat if you don't go out and try and get those students from around the country, not just here. So I know that it's another population to work with very hard because they don't. The low-income first generation is a huge issue. Going away from home will be an issue. Okay, but I think if you've got that connection already and a community already there, that connection then some, and the tribal affiliation is huge around different tribes. So anyway, my thoughts ahead of time. Great website, by the way. So thank you very much. These are all from your website, these pictures. So I took them all from your websites. What we find overall? 80% of respondents were very comfortable with MSU's climate, overall climate, very comfortable. These are all really good things. 81% felt comfortable with their academic program of study. 84% were comfortable with their classes or in their work units. Okay. Now, statistics sometimes lie, right? Because remember the demographics of the first slides. Who are the majority of the folks responding here, do you think? This is a rhetorical question. Pardon? Somebody said it.
Non-students, boys.
Well, some foreign students, but there's lots of people. Who are the, mostly the white majority folks of the 80%? Okay, those who are, this is what I find in my research all the time. It's very okay for folks who are in the majority. You feel comfortable and welcome and everything's cool. If you're not from the majority, whatever that minority piece might be, or disenfranchised group might be, you're not so comfortable. And that's not to say that you're bad people. Okay, it's to say that we see through a lens that's our lens, which doesn't allow us to see from the power and privilege that we own. Okay, so part of this is trying to do some education. We do a great job, I think, in higher education, or doing a good job, of providing services for students disenfranchised, like the Native American Center here. Okay, or some schools have Latino studies programs, or things like that. What about the folks or students in the middle? What are we doing to educate those students about power and privilege and what that means? Okay, where does my stuff come in? So an example I give is I teach in Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia is one place to recruit from. And when I first started teaching, the high schools in Philadelphia were integrated. So we had kids in Philadelphia who came from high schools that were Black, Latino, Portuguese, Italian, lots of different people in the high school. Okay? Now I go to Philadelphia and recruit, there's all Black high school and all white high school and all Latino high school. When they come to campus for the first time, some of those students recognize they're different for the very first time. If you're a Black kid from Philly, you go to school in Philly, your community's Philadelphia, all Black, you go to a Black church, you go to a Black high school. I go to Penn State, my first class, no Black kid in the class. It's like culture shock. That happens here too. You have students coming from very small farming communities. And for the first time, I put a situation where I'm rooming with somebody who's very different than I am because they come from the city. The city here might be Bisland. Okay? Or it might be Minneapolis. That kind of culture difference is very different. Even your skin color is the same. Okay, so think about some of the differences. Okay, I'm off track again, sorry. Other findings. Most people had not experienced anything negative on campus happening to them. Everything was pretty good for them. 82 had not been made aware of any conduct that might create a hostile or working learning environment. These two are definitions of harassment. I just don't use the word harassment because that sends negative connotations out to a lot of people, so we defined it for them. Most students feel comfortable in the classroom, and most employees feel comfortable in the workplace. Okay, so those are the good things. What are some of the challenges? We asked the question, have you personally experienced any conduct interfere with your ability to work or learn on campus? 16% of folks who answered the survey said, yes, I've experienced that. Okay, 106 people. I will tell you that it's very low compared to the other places I've been around the country and low in comparison to other campuses in North Dakota. Usual numbers between 20 and 25%. Okay, so you're less. It doesn't mean that it's good, right? There's still 100 people out there who feel that this is not a good thing, place for me. I'm feeling uncomfortable here. They experienced that mostly based upon their position. This is also a unique finding that I'm starting to find other places, but this is the first two times this another campus came from. I came from Lehigh University last week and did the same kind of presentation. And what I found is that status, meaning what place do you have in the institution, based upon my staff status, my faculty status, or my student status. Okay, A is the second one, also high. Both of these, these two are not students. These are staff. So I broke it down based upon position and conduct. So of the staff who experienced, and again, it's small numbers, right? Of the staff who experienced that conduct, 19%, 78% said it was based upon their positional status at the institution. Staff here feel devalued and underappreciated. That's that thing. And the comments in the qualitative analysis support that. And I went, as Lehigh did the presentation, I asked the question, and I'll ask you all the question. How many are staff here? Can I ask that question? People are staff members? Okay. Am I off the mark here with what I'm talking about? So one question I asked them was, what would make you feel more valued and appreciated? And one woman in the audience who's, I don't know, probably in her 60s, been there for 30 years, said, I wish someone would just say thank you. That was it. It wasn't about money. It wasn't about getting an award. It was about the fact that someone would take the time to say thank you and not treat them as second class citizens in the institution. I choose to be a staff member. Doesn't mean I'm less than you because you're faculty. And a lot of it, you'll see in a second, is not faculty to staff. That's another question. So, administrators, you're all happy. And the administrators were happy there. They didn't feel any kind of it at all. They were good. Okay, race due to race. So I looked at, this is now mostly students. Okay? That 21% of the people of color experienced this conduct. Over half of it was because of their race or ethnicity. And that's almost all Native American, American Indian. Remember that from the other slides. Okay? Women and men. This also is mostly staff. I broke this down by staff. I didn't put the slide up here, but you see in the report that women experience this conduct much more often than men due to their gender. And almost all of these, I think we actually mentioned two, are women staff. So we're going back and getting more information. Sexual orientation, people that are LGBTQ who identify as such on campus, some are closeted, some are out. Felt that they experienced it mostly based upon their sexual orientation. And spiritual affiliation, if you look at this, the non-Christian, it's pretty similar between non-Christian and Christian. So, but there are some Christians here who feel that if they're, based on their qualitative analysis, that say, you know, I'm being beat up because I'm evangelical Christian in my class. And it's too liberal in my class. Okay, so we need to kind of make the classroom a safe space for dialogue for all students, no matter whether you're theocratically right or theocratically left. How do you create that safe space for dialogue? What was the form of the conduct? Most often it's very subtle. Okay, we're moving away from the overt. We're being politically correct. And I've got these head nods around the room. Look around them like this, on your heads. It's not so much that I'm being, you know, oh, you this and this. Okay? It's more like I'm feeling intimidated, I'm feeling bullied, I'm feeling deliberately ignored. There are some derogatory remarks, but the first two are mostly the staff issues, and the derogatory remarks are mostly students. Students say nasty things to each other, apparently. I put these at the top of the list. There's a whole laundry list of issues, and you can look at all of them in the report. These are the ones that were the top percentage getters. I did add physical safety, because I think it's important. If there are seven people who feel unsafe on campus, that's an issue. So even though it's only a small number, I put it up there. Or fear of getting a poor grade because the classroom climate wasn't one that I felt comfortable in. 16 students said that. Okay, those are some things to start thinking about. Why? Here's an interesting slide also. Source of the conduct. If I did an overall slide and look at source, students are most often the source of the conduct. Okay? However, when I break it down, you find out that it's mostly student on student or faculty on student. That's a high number comparatively to other places around the country. Faculty on faculty and staff on staff. So it's not faculty treating staff badly. It's staff treating staff badly. It's within cohort. That's not surprising. This happens everywhere I go. It's mostly within cohort. Again, these are actionable things, things that you can take action on. So when we do issues of difference and we talk about, I hate the word diversity training. That's just, I don't want to go anymore, right? But how can we make this so, we're going to talk about staff issues in a room full of staff people facilitated by a staff member. Okay, now let's get it out on the table. Let's talk about the issues. Okay, so more focused kinds of interventions. Where did it occur? Most often in a university job. These are not unusual comparatively across the country. To get an idea, again, there's a laundry list of these to choose from. These are the ones that receive the most percentages. And folks could answer more than one on these. Okay, so they could say faculty office and in a meeting, so it happened in the same place. What did I do? I felt embarrassed. I told a friend. I avoided the harasser. I ignored it. Some made a complaint to a university official, and 60% had no idea what I should do. That's actionable. Okay, what do I do if I feel like I'm being mistreated? Or if there's an issue with another staff member, who do I go to? Is there a safe place I can talk where I know it won't get any further? Because a lot of folks didn't report because they're afraid if they did, there'd be some retaliation if they did. Okay, so those are things that are actionable. Keep in mind, these are percentages based upon that 106 people that reported feeling this, not the whole campus. Right? Okay, this is one that I added to the survey recently, and I'm finding that the results are astounding. When I ask about sexual assault, and on college campuses, most sexual assaults happen in the first 6 weeks of the first semester. And they're most often undergraduate female. This is disheartening to me that 10 people on your campus experience sexual assault while they've been at Minot State. And when I get this information, people are like, wow. Because the reports of this is not that high, I wouldn't think. Because women who are first year, first semester students don't report. They most often leave. This is an uncomfortable thing to talk about. I get that, 8 o'clock in the morning. But I think it's important for us to think a little bit more about it. So all were women, and 6 were undergraduate students, 3 were employees. Of the 3 employees, I went back and looked, they've only been here for a short time. They're not long-term employees. They're new employees. Where it occurred, on campus and off campus. 7 were on campus, 3 were off campus. I apologize for not being able to... Oh, there is one. Ha! I didn't even see it just now. Let's see if this works. That would be no.
No, I think that's your reporter.
Yeah. Oops! Don't touch that. Okay, I'm technology stupid, so there you go. Okay, who was the offender? The offender was a professor in 4 of the cases. I did a cross-tab, and all 4 of those were women students. And I defined sexual assault in the survey, so it's pretty clear what I meant by sexual assault. Okay, that's something for us to think about. Coworker or an acquaintance, the other two. What did I do? I told a friend, I told a family member. Only 2 sought medical services. Some saw support from campus faculty. Obviously, some people more than one time you can report these. Two people did absolutely nothing, which means that they're walking around with that hanging on them and trying to go through classes and so forth. Yes?
What is your definition there? So
sexual assault is, hang on, so I read it correctly. With my glasses. It's sexual intercourse. Okay, victimization and assault are two different things. Okay, victimization means that I'm being stalked or groped or things like that. Sexual assault says this. So that's an important thing for us to consider. And I don't mean to be so crass in the morning, but okay, or anytime.
So
yes.
What exactly does online mean? Site information online from our campus or just?
We just put online resources. We didn't put in the question whether it was off campus or on campus, but they sought help someplace other than going to someone to talk to. Okay. And this is a hard discussion because oftentimes the power differential between a faculty member and a student is so great that who am I going to tell? That person has my grade in their hands, right? So we can do a little more analysis on this, and that 10 isn't, it's not unique to you. Just came from Lehigh that 86 women assaulted in the first year. 72 were first year, first semester within the first 6 weeks. So part of this is a national issue, not just a North Dakota issue. And I bring it to your attention because it's something we can work on. Okay? Other questions on those? Okay, I also ask questions about for people that have identities that are sometimes invisible. You may not know you're American Indian or Native American based upon how you look in many cases. Okay, if there's been a number of, mixed marriage, whatever. So what I looked at was LGBTQ, okay, and we can see that people that are LGBTQ is questioning. People that identify as such are less comfortable being out on campus than those who are heterosexual. That makes sense. And people of color are less likely to be comfortable being out as compared to those who are of the majority population. So I'll try and pass if I can, as either an LGBTQ student or as a person of color. Okay, so next piece is about perception. We did the experiences, now we're on perceptions. I'm going back and reiterating that slide where I talked about the comfort level in the beginning. Most folks are pretty comfortable with the climate here at Minot State. And so by race, not quite so much. Okay? People of color are less comfortable than white people on campus. They make up that other 20% who aren't comfortable. And keep in mind that race at Minot is mostly who? Native American, American Indian. That's mostly people of color are fitting those categories. Looked at them by race, by department and program, similar kinds of results. Oops.